Now we switch gears to different kind of like single molecule problem. So, but there's molecule in combined field, and we have comparison with experiment a lot. So our collaborators here is Hebejin and Junyi's group at Chile, NIST. And David Newell from Yale University, and here two people, Kostas Makridis, Alexander Petrov is from my group at Temple University. So creation of near quantum degenerate gas of polar potassium rubidium cesium molecules in absolute ground state by groups of Gila and Innsbruck University opens up the possibility to study collective phenomena, creating a new quantum computing scheme, performing precision, high precision measurement with polar molecules, and also probing ultra-cold chemistry. In most of these applications, polar molecules are placed in optical potentials, and two or more raw vibrational states are manipulated, and that requires very accurate measurement of transition frequency between these levels. So when molecules are in optical traps, we have Stark shift of these levels, and in principle, Stark shift of different raw vibrational levels in optical fields are not the same. So therefore, system become very sensitive to intensity fluctuation of lasers, which could lead to large uncertainties in measurements. For example, there's a very nice proposal by Peter Zoller's group to use a combined static electric field and microwave field to paramagnetic molecules, where you know, we would like to keep microwave field resonance across all sample of polar molecules in optical lattice, which is extremely difficult if we have different Stark shift and different shift of levels with fluctuation of laser intensity and electric field. Therefore, selection of trapping conditions where internal states of molecules experience similar or identical trapping conditions is very beneficial for different kind of experiments. The next few slides, I will discuss different ways to reach these goals. Of course, Stark shift is first of all defined by dynamic poisability, alpha, and intensity of the laser. So we probe different ways to change this Stark shift of different raw vibration levels. So we looked at the changing frequency of the trapping laser. We also tried to change static electric or magnetic field strengths, and also looked at changing orientation of these fields relative to polarization of trapping light. And it's a little bit kind of historic perspective. That's what we done some time ago, and we used so-called simple model of the polar molecule. It's not extremely simple. We use all structure within molecule, but we didn't implement certain conditions which are very important in an so-called experiment. So therefore I call it simple model. And then second part of my talk will be devoted to more complex, more realistic model for potassium rubidium molecule. And we worked with close collaboration with Gila experimentalists where we implement magnetic, strong magnetic field, and later implemented electric field that they will be using soon to manipulate all the molecules and maybe create many body states. So a few words about dynamic plausibility. Everybody knows the things. I just remind you that dynamic plausibility of our raw vibrational level of a molecule is due to the dipole coupling of this level to other raw vibrational levels and continuum states of the ground and excited states. So how we can calculate? In the beginning we used this perturbation theory method to calculate potential surfaces, permanent and transition dipole moment for potassium rubidium, rubidium cesium molecules, which were not really known pretty well. Slowly we become, more equipped with some experimental information from Eberhard Thiemann, beautiful potentials for potassium rubidium, for example, ground states. And there was some information for excited states, not very much. So, but we worked on it, and of course we couldn't include all four potentials and transition dipole moment. But experience shown that we can truncate it. We can restrict ourselves to certain potentials which have a largest transition dipole moment and have smallest, not very large detuning. Or the it's like dipole transition, not like two electron transitions. And our experience and comparison to experiments show that it actually works pretty well, this truncation. But later, we started to use, which is the same thing, but still, the way how we calculate dynamic plausibility is just use some very advanced quantum chemistry quartz, which in principle could allow you to calculate dynamic plausibility as a function of interatomic distance and frequency embedded in a couple cluster method. And as I know, Robert Mazinski contributed to this way of calculating dynamic plausibility. They worked with his group implemented it in a well-known MOL-PRO quad. At that time, we used a different quad, C4, but and I got improved actually dynamic plausibility. So I start to discuss our experience when we just change frequency, because in atom.
So why does the coupled cluster technique increase the accuracy? Does it include more of this?
It's a very powerful method, and maybe Robert tell us more about this. It's just beautiful.
Do you guys use like?
We like it very much.
Sorry? Do you use like Dalgarno Lewis on top of couple cluster? Or?
No.
Just the direct summation? Yeah?
No, there's no direct summation. It's in the linear response.
So, as I know from work of André and Junier, his science paper on this topic about magic conditions for atoms, that was first step to find this condition that just change laser frequency. So, and we wanted to check whether it will work for molecules as well. So here's a simple problem without any external fields. So we calculated the dynamic permissibility for lowest rotational states and the sublevels. It's J equals 0 and 1, and the sublevels M equals 0 and M equals plus minus 1. And we did actually in much wider ranges as shown here, but this range what I show here is very much related to Walter Kohl experiments. This is frequency which is very far detuned from any resonances in any of these molecules and used very much to trap Walter Kohl molecules. So we can see there is no crossing happened. So that would not be even for higher vibrational levels. So that one doesn't work. So then, of course, immediately it comes to our mind that polar molecules have permanent dipole moment and you can affect the levels by, just applying external electric field. They could be levels shifted or mixed to each other. So we used we calculated permissibility or a stark shift applying such a electric field, and there here I introduce angle between polarization of a laser beam, linear polarization, and then the electric field, which is over the towards the Z laboratory axis. So we used, we didn't look very, very wide range of electric fields because as I, talked to Stephen yesterday, I was told by experimentalists that they don't really like very strong external electric field. So we looked at the range up to 15 kilowatt per centimeter, and it requires actually, you can converge this problem, including a rotational quantum number up to 10. So here there are graphs for star shift or dynamic permissibility as a function of electric field strength. And electric field, two cases. The upper two channels, it's potassium rubidium molecule. The lower one, rubidium cesium molecule. But also, other cases are when electric field parallel or perpendicular to polarization of light. So again, the same kind of sublevels are present. And here, I just look at the frequency which was used in Geely experiment in the first stage, and then they actually switched to slightly different frequency or wavelengths. So we can see there are magic electric field strengths shown by these circles. So for potassium rubidium, again, it's not a comfortable field strength. Electric field strengths. It's about 10 kilowatt per centimeter. For rubidium cesium, a different story. It's pretty nice, 2 kilowatt per centimeter when permissibilities of J equals 0 and 1 cross. So it's only because rubidium cesium molecules is much polar molecules That's a place major role, and I mean it's just pull a twice as stronger dipole moment, but apparently it's very important. But of course motivated the idea again to do something very good for potassium rubidium experiment and find some other way to, you know, find these magic conditions if they cannot go to very high electric field strengths. So we looked at what happened if we change angle between electric field and polarization of light. Here is two graphs again for potassium rubidium, rubidium cesium. And it shows very nicely that actually it doesn't matter what electric field you choose. Here I didn't show many fields, and I don't want to fill this picture that nothing will be visible. But it's actually they all cross at the same angle, 54 degrees. And the same story for rubidium cesium, and it will be the same story for any molecule. It is consequence of the rank 2 tensor structure of possibility. But then again, as I told, that was sort of simplified model, because most important, actually, magnetic field is important since many ultra-cold experiments use Feshbach resonances. So, and they cannot, you know, switch magnetic field and start to do something else. I believe they always have this magnetic field and a system. But I think the most important thing for this problem is existence of the nuclear quadrupole moment in the molecule, even being in a single sigma state. So in this moment is mixed or coupled to molecular rotation, and it must be included. And in case of potassium rubidium molecule, Gillick group already measured this value, because it actually was obvious when they started to investigate lowest rotational sublevels, hyperfine structure, they saw there is a splitting exists between all these sublevels, which can be explained even without any external field, explained by this internal interaction. So, but Jeremy Hudson, for example, he calculated this kind of property for many other molecules. And the comparison, his calculation for potassium rubidium and the experimental measurement shows it's very good agreement. So if somebody wants to implement in the system this, I recommend to look at Jeremy's paper. So here we also added magnetic field, and for a moment we didn't include electric field, which we include later. So we have this theoretical model where we include many rotational hyperfine levels. It's not only rotational quantum numbers. We actually look at 0 and 1 only and the projection, but also quantum numbers related to nuclear spin projection of potassium and rubidium atoms. And it gave us 144 channels. So the Hamiltonian, and we call it exact, because we look at all possible channels, includes rotational energy, nuclear-Zeeman interaction of two atoms, a nuclear quadrupole interaction for each atom, and a star shift with a trapping potential. So here, I would say, it's a nice things to do, and there are not too many channels. Of course, you can diagonalize this matrix, but the problem may appear that it's very hard to identify channels, especially if you increase external fields very much with mixed channels. And then, of course, you still need to identify to look at something, right? So if they mix very much, that would be difficult to do. In our case, it was actually not too difficult to look at this full model or exact model, and then we actually simplified it using analytical representation for matrix elements to compare. And we focused on very specific four eigenstates, which is J equals 0 and 1, and M 0 plus minus 1, and also this, you know, for potassium minus 4, quantum number, and for rubidium 1 half. And we done it because experimentalists focused on this particular level. They found a they knew where they are, they identified them. So, and it happened that in theory, they possess like 90 something percent of this characteristic. So you can easily forget about other interactions if you look at the analytical presentation. So here I talk about a little bit this about analytical results, where one level of this J equals 0 and M equals 0 is spatially separated. It could be considered independently. Mostly we looked at the interaction between those J equals 1 levels, sublevels, and the matrix elements here introduced analytically through alpha parallel perpendicular. It's kind of reduced polarizabilities, and they depend on angle theta. Now angle theta is the angle between magnetic field direction and polarization of laser light. And also there is a eta parameter which actually include quadrupole quadrupole interaction between these sublevels. It practically shift each of sublevels its own way, which we took from experiment, measured value.
So Svetlana, could I ask a question at this stage? On this, the this is at 546 Gauss or so. So the nuclear spins in this case are assumed to be completely uncoupled because the magnetic field has lined them up in space. And even in the excited state, the nuclear spins still stay basically locked onto that space frame magnetic axis. So you can essentially ignore the nuclear spins in this case. But the variation is basically the projections of J of 0 or plus or minus 1. And so basically the nuclear spins are passive spectators.
Yes,
and
exactly.
This particular molecule.
Right, this particular molecule, yes. We know it's from experiment.
Will that always be true? Or is it, I mean, it's got to depend on the magnetic field, and that since they're using such a high field, they're going to couple the nuclear spins here.
We didn't do it here. But in principle, you can always improve. We didn't, alpha parallel perpendicular also, we believe it should be the same for all sublevels is principle, not always true. And if you talk to Andrea, who want to have this perfect, you know, data for high precision measurements, it could be reconsidered, this kind of things.
Okay, so basically the ground state and spins are pretty well decoupled, but in J-Fold 1, I think you said that maybe a 90% mixture of this particular spin state and maybe a 10% of other
spin. Yeah, for this, but it could be other states could be mixed more, we checked. For some states, it's hard to plot this picture because all suddenly you're not sure in some pieces, they 50-50 to plot. We plot for other sublevels, possible different variations of quantum numbers.
Your calculation is for, is it for the 90% spin eigenstate or the 100% spin eigenstate?
Three by three matrix or four level system, yes, but for this particular case. And for other cases, it could be not true. For smaller fields, it may work for many cases. For larger fields, it could be even worse, especially electric field may influence so much. We already checked it.
So, this is zero electric field, right? I mean, just the light
field. Yes, here, right, zero electric field, yes. What I just want to point out here, that crossing between blue curve and a black curve, which is 0, 0 and 1, 0, happens not at 54 degrees anymore. So this quadrupole rotational interaction actually change magic conditions. So here is an example comparison. Exact theory by dashed lines and the same, you know, picture of the approximate analytical kind of approach full length, and then we can see there's a difference, but not very strong, a big difference, and maybe within the uncertainty of experiment. So here, apparently, for theta equals zero, uncertainty is larger than for other thetas. So this is totally experimental results. I just admire this picture. It is very interesting in sense dual group managed to measure coherence time for as a function of angle again, and they found indeed the coherence time is increased 10 times due to, you know, selection of appropriate angle between magnetic field direction and polarization of light. So here is like 47 degrees, but in theory we got 51, 52, and it's in uncertainty. I would say experimental measurement of plausibility extremely difficult. So they use two different methods. It's one D lattice, and they sort of shake lattice and look at the heating resonances, assuming something about the potential, which may not be exactly true. But then they used another method, which is maybe I would like it more, when they just look at the shift of the microwave transition between different sublevels and see how the change is a function of angle. So they sort of agree using both methods. But still, there is particular uncertainty. And here, still, coherence time, not very high, is millisecond. And at the end of the talk, I would like to discuss this problem. Any suggestion would improve this situation? What other things we have to include in order to increase this coherence time is extremely important. So here, we add another field. So we have now B field, static electric field, and also trapping light, still there, right? Trapping. And we have additional angle phi because between B field and E field. And again, the goal is consider polar molecules in an optical lattice when all these fields are applied, since that's a reality if you want to create many body states or use this scheme for quantum computation, you certainly need to add a vector field or microwave field, and of course you already have a magnetic field and trapping potential. So we also try to look at the induced dipole moments in molecule in presence of these fields, since again, dipole-dipole interaction may play a crucial role for these schemes, entanglement, it could be positive, negative effect, so that would be interesting to understand. So here, it may sound we've done this, but we didn't yet, so we're working on it to see how interaction can influence on the trapping conditions. So here's the result of our calculation when we again consider the same four rotational hyperfine states, and already looked at the picture as a, you know, polarizability as a function of angle theta and phi at the same time. So we can see that a lot of crossing going on between all these surfaces. Here, essentially, the same thing, only selected two surfaces are much, might be most important this projection M. I change J to N, some works like for single sigma molecules called rotational quantum number, not by J, by N. So, sorry, but you know, I can tell you that it is the same rotational quantum number and projection on z axis. So essentially, we can see that crossing happened on almost a circle. It's not exactly a circle, it's an elliptical curve. And it starts from certain theta 57 and goes to phi equals zero. So it's kind of occupies first part of the angle degrees from zero to 50 something for.
And so you have possible. Fixed the angle between the laser and the electric field.
Because that would be... Phi angle. Well, it fixed, actually, this angle between phi, between B and E.
You fixed between magnetic and electric.
Yeah, and not really fixed. I mean, both angles changed.
So if you go to the previous
There's a
slide.
Third angle, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you fix it?
Yeah, we just put in... electric field and polarization field in the same plate. But we should not do this. I mean, we're changing it right now. We have to have another one. Yeah, exactly.
So how much are these magic angle lines now dependent on the field strengths?
That would be next slides.
Oh,
of course, we can. Yeah. So this things exercise is done for quite weak electric field because. That was experiment one to check. They like this kind of field to use an experiment. So again, it's a just cut to the surface to maybe see more from what kind of complicated three-dimensional figure. And it shows us that if you take theta sort of 51 degrees, which if there's no electric field, it's sort of magic angle, then phi, sort of magic phi, could be 23 degrees. So we can conclude that the magic conditions are sensitive to orientation of both fields. That's the only thing we can say right now. So if we look at the strong fields, and strong is not strong, we checked all many different fields, and if you start from 1 kilowatt per centimeter and higher, up to 20, I think this is not much visible maybe, but this dashed line says 20 kilowatt per centimeter. Then it doesn't depend on electric field. See, the crossing, I mean, everything depends more or less. If you increase field, it probably will behave strangely, a different way. But it's still going through this crossing 23 degrees. But if we go to smaller fields, which is sort of going from 0 to 0.5, no, yeah, 0.4, maybe 3 kilowatt per centimeter, then picture is absolutely different. Oh, 0, of course, it's just nothing happened, but in this kind of graph, but when you just increase a little bit external field strengths, then they start to modify these curves. And I just presented one in order to, be more sort of visible what I want to say. But in principle, after point, I think, even 2 or 3 kilowatt per centimeter, curves behave differently, slowly becoming, looking like previous picture, going to this direction. So why is that so big difference? And our explanation is that there's a competition between term D dot E and nuclear quadrupole interaction happened at the small fields. And if I can tell you values of this nuclear quadrupole interaction around 230-60 kilohertz at the largest. But there are smaller values. It depends what level you're looking at. So that if D dot E is this kind of, of course D is at potassium rubidium molecule, not very large. So, and it comes together and it gives us this kind of behavior, which is interesting in the sense that there is a wide range of overlap between 0,0 and 1,0 states, which is very desirable for experiment, since it's not very a string kind of conditions. So those conditions are less sensitive to rotational coherence. Therefore, we may investigate some more this kind of situation.
Could I ask just a very simple question about units? So this alpha, I mean this 10 to the minus 5 megahertz per that intensity, so how many atomic units is that?
It's about approximately 1,000 to 2,000 atomic units. So if we talk about strontium fluorine, Stevens molecule, which he found some literature, 11 angstrom cube, static plausibility. That one, I tried a word, maybe I'm wrong, but it looks like it's like 72 atomic units.
Yeah,
he is 1,000. He is 1,000, 2,000, this value. So the coefficient is one atomic unit, I think 4.7, 10 to minus 8. Units. Experimentalists like it. They measure it, you know, what the centimeter square intensity. That's
so. But what they ultimately want? Do they want a kilohertz shift, or what do they? I mean, say you're talking about this sensitivity to. Say this angle of alignment, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, what type of shifts are they comfortable with?
I think they mostly there's no huge shifts at all, right, in any of these pictures. But mostly they want to find where those possibilities cause. And here they cross in wide range.
I would say they might not know it themselves.
So suppose they want a coherence time of a second, then I guess they have to control it to a hertz level.
Yeah.
Right? Is this here?
Yeah.
So, and then actually that would define the range of sensitivity to the angle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it seems like you, in the experiment, you would normally have the angle between the magnetic and electric fields fixed. And the thing that you tune is the polarization angle. Because it seems like from your calculations you can also compensate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As long as the angle is below 57 degrees or so between the electric and magnetic fields, you can just tune the polarizer to do it such. But you should realize that also the polarization of the light itself is not super pure. Or that's an experimental thing
right.
To worry about, that perhaps it's a little bit unlimited.
Maybe know how much.
That will actually lead to a problem. Or, for example, the windows of the vacuum chamber have a little bit of birefringence, and they will already tilt the plane of polarization a bit.
Also influence, depends on what kind of window, right?
Maybe it depends on the type of window, actually, Actually, if you squeeze on the window, you change that bar.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I will communicate with you.
So to add to this, for at least the many body physics experiments, they might want to the time scales might be more like a couple milliseconds rather than a second. So you need so the characteristic scale for interactions is maybe 2 or 3 milliseconds. So that's a little bit better. And the other thing is you can couple this with spin echo techniques.
Yeah.
And those will actually eliminate, in principle, if you had a perfect spin echo, it would completely eliminate these non-magic angle type things, at least if you apply a train of them or something. But of course, you don't just want to use that. You want to probably use that in addition to something like this so that you're not trying to spin echo away.
Yeah, I think it's an addition. Yeah. Yes, yeah. There are
one,
other
one
things.
One of these can be combined to get...
Yeah,
you know,
it would. It will not hurt. I mean, it would be good to have more or less, especially you can change angle. Maybe it's not terribly difficult things to do. So therefore, it's useful. Yeah. And then the last thing I just show, that maybe it's pretty known behavior of induced dipole moment with external electric field. When you increase electric field, nothing else is important. I mean, everything defined by this electric field. And then we see dipole moment become negative from component 1, 0, and it's easily explained because there's a contribution from a low-lying state to 1, 0. The other two states have contribution only from upper states. Therefore, until this 0, 0, and 1, 0 interaction or connection, coupling, playing most important role, it goes down, and then it join other two curves, and apparently requires so strong electric field to reach known from electronic structure calculation a permanent dipole moment. And it's an amazingly strong field needed to actually reach this convergence. I have these points for discussion if we have time. Maybe not. We can discuss other time. For one question is, since we found it's a nice overlap for wide range of angles for this particular field, is it an interesting external field, or it's too small for any many body simulations? So do you have any idea?
So I can make one comment, and actually I'll talk about this in my talk tomorrow. Even at very, very small electric fields, if you use internal degrees of freedom, like Alexei talked about, to make spin models, you get interesting spin dynamics from the flip-flop patterns. And these just come from the transition matrix dipole.
Yes.
So you don't actually need a big induced dipole as long as these are there. All you need is just a very small field to split all the other rigid rotor or rotational states off.
Oh, very nice, yeah.
So I think this would be a very useful
to know, yeah. So, and then, of course, we have to check this, what happened to these conditions if we include also interaction between dipoles. So it's not only one molecule, but of course there are other molecules nearby. Even they are in optical lattice, two-dimensional, whatever, they still need to interact. So how it will influence? So we will include this interaction. If somebody knows already examples, but we will try to understand. And then, of course, with source of decoherence, maybe dipole-dipole interaction could be one of the sources. If you fix it, some, you know, maybe angle should be changed according to this. And then it improve a little bit situation, I don't know. So, what other sources you told one of this?
Maybe if it is from dipole-dipole interactions, maybe the decoherence itself is interesting, right? Maybe there's correlation and things building up. And that's
maybe it's positive things to do. Yeah, it's almost like this. Okay.
So in atoms, you look at the so-called doubling magic condition. So it's not stability with respect to the structure which you cancel out, but then there is a question of stability with respect to magnetic field. And for example, in rubidium, in the hyperfine transitions, what we get is like a parabolic dependence of the Zeeman shift, so it's like a second order. Zeeman on the value of magnetic field. So if you are sitting right at the minimum, then you are not sensitive to the fluctuations of magnetic field. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Experimentally, it actually uses.
Yeah, of course, we didn't include fluctuation of magnetic field at all, so which is not right. Of course, maybe, we have to.
Another dimension to this already complicated problem, right? Mm-hmm. So if you could look at the Zeeman shifts also, and look at these points of minima, in respect to the value of magnetic field. That way it would eliminate another source of decay here.
Yeah. You have this paper or something?
So at some point, I think you made a comment about the nuclear quadrupole coupling shifting the magic angle. So can you talk a little bit more about that? Maybe I just missed it. But so it's not 54 degrees. It's shifted. And I know also the Jill experiments might have seen a shift, although I think they attributed it just to not having perfect control over the angle.
No, they agree absolutely. That is one of the major reasons for shift. Angle becomes smaller. How smaller? There's some uncertainty in this.
So how much smaller is it predicted?
Coherence time measurement shows 47 degrees instead of 54. But our calculations, when we agree in polarizabilities very well, parallel perpendicular, and it's simple three-dimensional matrix, you can solve this easily.
In your calculations,
it shows 51 degrees.
51.
So what is this, uncertainty measurement or something?
And if I apply simultaneous magnetic and electric fields, would that angle change then?
Later on, I changed this angle here.
So how did the magic angle change?
There are two magic angles. They work together.
Already.
You cannot say one anymore. And we just choose 51 degrees for one angle and then look at the other angle. But we probably need to choose one angle very convenient for experiment, like perpendicular to polarization, and then try to find these conditions for other angle or third angle.
If I may, on the first point, it turns out that in the computation scheme, the molecules, needs to be careful about maintaining a certain resolution of the frequencies of the optical frequencies that are involved in gate operations or involved in gates. Uh-huh. And I'm sure that my remark will sound more cryptic than what I have said already. You don't really need a lot of time to explain it, or at least I will need a lot of time to explain it. Uh-huh. But the thing is that the bottom line is that the molecules need to be considerably oriented in order to ensure that these frequency differences will be big enough. The frequency differences that are needed for the operations are big enough.
Mm-hmm. So I agree.
I'm not sure.
Very important orientation.
Very small strength of the field would actually suffice to orient them.
Exactly, yes. That's a negative thing. But in principle, we were reading your papers, excited about these orientations. But I may not understand completely, but I found I can estimate orientation if I include a dipole-dipole interaction. Right now, if we have these fields pretty, not very strong, starting from 1 kilo, everything oriented as an electric field. We checked it. we have this option to look. So we need some other forces to change this orientation, you know, have different tilting kind of effect. But then we need to include and that small field will be, yeah.
Well, it's noon now, so how many other questions?
Only one short question. The optics field you have is always perpendicular to the electric field, the external electric field.
No.
There's no uncertainty in that one, in your calculation. Is that so? You consider
not always
the angle between the optical field and the magnetic field, that was theta, I think, and the angle between magnetic and electric field was
yeah.
Phi.
Yeah.
But there was always perpendicular to the other angle.
Yeah. If you put in certain.
There's also some kind of variation, and therefore.
Yeah, there is. You have to change slightly. That would be third angle, actually. Yeah.
Quite. I only want to say there is an additional uncertainty in that one.
Exactly.
Fluctuation,
yes.
And especially if you look for birefringence, therefore there is also this kind of change, which might change the optics.
Yes. Yes. Exactly, we have to be careful about this.
The alphas, you were always calculating using no the alpha perpendicular and parallel. You were choosing always no hyperfine was involved. You see, you consider the hyperfine only in the round state and never in the excited. So therefore, this kind of decoupling on the axis, might this also depend on the hyperfine, on the excited state? This will also...
Oh, it's a vibration average, of course.
So I think, of course, it's a very much involved calculation that if you include this also.
Yeah.
But this might give them new insight about the sensitivity on that magic angle.
We found that it's not important to... It's within uncertainty of experiment and theory. But of course, if you look at something else, then you have to look at the influence of external field on excited states, and they will change our permissibility. Right? But the tuning are very large. So our hope is the tuning very large to these vibrational levels of excited states. So, yeah.
I think probably we should close because it's just about noon. I'd like one comment. And first of all, it's really nice all that you showed us all of this complexity because it points out that cone molecules are fairly complex objects with multiple kinds of fields that can be used to control them. And one of the big unexplored things is nuclear spin, which I think is what's these alkaline type of molecules. Very high nuclear spin degeneracies again. So what I like to do, and the defense matter guy should really think about this, find out ways to take advantage of that nuclear spin. I sound like I may be thinking about that, but it's these are very complex systems. They're not simple little dipoles that just have J0 and 1.
Yes.
They're dipoles that have different responses to different optical, magnetic, and electric fields in different directions. And they also have this extra degree of freedom of spin. So they're very complex objects. But hopefully once the experimentalists learn how to get control over them, they'll do neat things.
But Paul, it would be nice when we discuss, maybe you will be more certain what actually interesting thing we can look at in this magnetic nuclear spins problems, because we don't know. I mean, what you are looking for? What we have all this big matrix, we can choose any variations of states,
then
we don't know
it's
what
very
we.
Rich and complex.
Right.
And experimentalists are going to have to work with molecules they can actually get, with fields they can actually achieve. So therefore, my plea to the condensed matter and quantum information people is to think about what you can do with the real molecules they actually have.
But to know is you have some idea would be great.